This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The economy and the Federal Reserve. I go to Joseph Sternberg. He's a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes the political economics column. He's based in London. And Joe and I have not had an opportunity to exchange thoughts since Chairman Jerome Powell made his presentation most recently, following the two-day Fed meeting at the end of July, about raising interest rates 0.75 point and also the tools that are available for the Federal Reserve to tame the price instability, aka inflation, at the same time protecting what they can of the jobs market. Joe, a very good evening to you. I recall exactly, we had a discussion some weeks past of your observations of a new book from Ben Bernanke, who was the chairman of the Federal Reserve during the Great Recession. And one of the tools that Mr. Bernanke said was especially useful during the crisis was forward guidance. And I was surprised to hear Jerome Powell in his presentation mentioning that they were very careful and that they raised 0.75 point to tame the inflation, everybody nodding according to plan because that had been announced beforehand. But he said no more forward guidance. Is that a surprise to you, Joe, that all of a sudden the Ben Bernanke tool is discarded? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. It is a little bit of a surprise that they are giving up on it, although it's kind of a welcome development to the extent that they are giving up on it. So, I mean, for people who have forgotten or never knew, forward guidance refers to this practice where officials at the central bank, including the Chairman Jerome Powell, are constantly feeding us all of these statements and economic projections and speeches and policy outlooks that are supposed to give the market some idea of what to expect that the Fed or any other central bank is going to do in the future. And the concept behind this was twofold. Partly, they hope that this kind of information flow would steer markets toward the longer-term interest rates that the Fed hopes to achieve, when most of the actual tools that the Fed has to act in the market involve very short-term rates. So the first thing they were trying to do was to talk longer-term interest rates in the economy in a particular direction. And then the other goal here has been to try to minimize volatility in the market by preparing the market for what the central bank announcement is going to be, so that you wouldn't have these episodes of big volatility as investors have to digest these central bank announcements when they happen. The problem is this has all become kind of a trap for central banks as they tried to get out of this inflation crisis, because they found themselves in this situation where if they had signaled to markets for a long time that the rates would be low for the foreseeable future, they've been very nervous about backtracking on that in the actual meeting to fight inflation for fear that doing that might startle investors and create all of this volatility that the Fed thinks would be very destructive. So it is kind of news that they are deciding that the costs of getting tied into this forward guidance that would often leave them feeling trapped with inappropriately loose policy, that they think the costs of that now outweigh whatever benefits they might have thought that they were getting from that policy.
What happens now, and it's already done, is that the market players themselves start forward guiding with guesses. Immediately after that press conference, it went from 0.75 point in September, thank you very much, to maybe 0.5 point in September, thank you very much, and the market started to rally. That tells me that Jerome Powell hasn't quite got a handle on controlling the markets, nor his aim to reduce inflation. Now, the other thing he said was, we're going to depend upon data. Haven't they always depended on data, Joe? Is that a new statement from the chairman?
Well, I mean, so what's going on here is that, I mean, this notion that you would be data dependent at each meeting as it comes up, historically is how they said that they were operating, and actually this whole forward guidance method pulled them away from that, because then they would feel like even if the inflation data came in hotter than they were expecting, that they would have to hold off on acting because they were bound to what they had already told the markets they were going to do. Part of the problem that we've got here, though, is that although he is explicitly saying that the Fed is stepping away from forward guidance and is going to be driven by the data, the rest of his press conference last week didn't actually sound an awful lot like that. I mean, there was an awful lot of forward guidance in this press conference that was supposed to not be doing forward guidance anymore. You know, at other times he seemed to suggest that he thinks that we are already kind of close to the interest rate that the Fed thinks that they would need to achieve in order to get inflation under control. Well, I mean, saying that is a signal that the Fed is not planning on more big interest rate increases in the future, which is probably one reason why the market is now not pricing in those big increases anymore. So I think that it's an example of how these old habits are going to turn out to be very difficult for the Fed to break.
Speaking of the Fed, you have an excellent book review in the Wall Street Journal most recently about a new book. Joe is now specializing in books about the Federal Reserve. That's the plight of writing a political economics column based in London. The Fed Unbound is the title of the book. Subhead: Central Banking in a Time of Crisis. That's certainly what we're discussing. Lev Menand is the author. And as I understand it, Joe, in reading your review, the ambition for everyone is that the Federal Reserve, the central bankers, will provide the money that the economy needs to grow. At the same time, it will make sure that it's allocated efficiently. That is, it doesn't get distorted. However, this paragraph strikes me as what goes wrong and why. The Fed has helped to erode the system by tolerating, since the mid-20th century, the expansion of a wide range of non-bank money creators. It has extended its lender of last resort backstop, the keystone of the monetary system, to dollars created by money market funds, insurers such as AIG, and even foreign entities via swap arrangements with other central banks that lend Fed credibility to dollars created abroad. Isn't that what went wrong in the 2008 recession? Or is this a nightmare we haven't lived yet, Joe?
No, this definitely fed into the run-up to that, you know, global financial panic, and is continuing to create problems today. I mean, the root of this has to do fundamentally with what the Fed is supposed to be doing, and it might kind of surprise people to discover that they don't create an awful lot of money themselves by you know, running the printing presses, whether you mean that literally or metaphorically. A lot of the money that's created in our economy comes from the private sector. You know, if you go to your bank and you take out a loan, oftentimes what is happening is that they are just creating out of thin air by the stroke of a few keys in the computer, the dollars that they are crediting into your account, you know, once you've taken out the loan. What historically made the system work is the fact that there was kind of the government role here in regulating that by restricting the ability of the private sector banks to create additional money or credit. And then also the fact that the Fed would be available as a lender of last resort if the regulated banks did run into trouble. And so I think that the really interesting argument in this book, the Fed Unbound, is that the Fed has lost control of that process, because over the past 50 or 60 years, they have extended their backstop, that lender of last resort, to a lot of institutions like investment banks or even insurers like AIG in the last crisis that are not regulated commercial banks, who are not supposed to be creating money. And yet they are. And the result of all of this has been a financial system that is much harder to regulate, and that also is much less stable than it otherwise would be.
Let me seize on your mention of AIG. My memory, and it's dim, but it's 14 years since I first learned that there was a problem. The overnight rates spiked in early August. So that meant the money that you needed to borrow to keep your business open night after night after night went from something moderate to, I think it was double digits or higher. It kept climbing, and it was a signal, but nobody knew what the signal was. Yes, Bear Stearns had failed, but Lehman's hadn't failed yet. So my memory is what really surprised everyone was that AIG, an insurance company, a very prominent insurance company, had sold some kind of insurance to people who were in the market so that if the market plunged, they would make you good. And AIG couldn't pay their bills. It essentially failed. Is that an example of a non-bank creation of credit that then distorted the system? I remember everybody pointing fingers at AIG, but the person who'd done it was no longer there. It was some strange resolution, and what followed was a deep recession.
Yes, I mean, that's an example of the kind of problem that Lev Menand is talking about in this book, because, again, the explosion of that kind of credit and credit insurance is actually a form of money in the economy. A lot of those securities tended to be pretty tradable, which was one of the big difficulties you had in that panic, figuring out who was exposed to what. And then the Fed stepped in and basically created a new lender of last resort backstop ad hoc and on the fly for a lot of these new kinds of credit, which are very different from the normal kinds of bank credit that the, you know, for extended by commercial banks that the Fed is supposed to be backstopping. So, you know, that is a perfect example of how, and this breeds more and more instability the more of it that you do, because now no one can ever be entirely certain which forms of credit in the economy might end up benefiting from this backstop one day and which wouldn't. And that confusion can actually create a lot of mischief too.
I'm speaking with Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. Most importantly, he's in London writing political economics after many years in Hong Kong, many years in Asia. And when we come back, I'm going to ask Joe to reflect upon the market's upset over the news that the Speaker of the House was traveling to Taipei, Taiwan, despite the threats by the People's Republic of China. What does this have to do with the global markets? If anything, I'm John Batchelor.